Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by our proud title sponsor, NHL Sense Arena, the next generation of off-ice hockey training for players and goalies. Look, we know how much you invest in your children's hockey development, the early mornings, the travel, and let's not forget the expenses of training for hockey camps, private ice time, the general expenses of the season. It's a lot. But wouldn't it be great to bring that on-ice practice experience home that's fun, fits into your schedule, and that's affordable? If you said yes, which I'm sure you did, you've got to check out NHL Sense Arena. It's a top-tier virtual reality training game that brings the on-ice practice experience home so you can practice anytime and anywhere, literally. You can transform any part of your home into a virtual ice rink where you're getting unlimited access to over 100 drills, training plans from top coaches and players, weekly drill challenges, and more that focus on improving hockey sense and physical cognitive skills, starting at just $33 per month. That is a lot cheaper than an hour of ice time. The physical side of hockey gets a lot of attention, but we don't focus enough on the mental side of it. It's something we talk about on this show all the time. NHL Sense Arena provides an immersive solution for players to sharpen those skills when ice time is limited or not affordable and they want to get those extra reps in. So, for our listeners, NHL Sense Arena is offering an exclusive $50 off their annual plan. All you got to do is head over to their website, hockey.senseArena.com. Again, hockey.senseArena.com, and use our code HOCKEYNEVERSTOPS, and you'll level up your off-ice training by using NHL Sense Arena. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting us and NHL Sense Arena. Enjoy this episode of Our Kids Play Hockey. Hello, hockey friends and families around the world, and welcome to another edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. This is a signature edition. What do I mean by that? My two co-hosts, Christy Casciano Burns and Mike Benelli, if you're watching, you can see them right now. They might look a little bit quizzical. If you're listening, you can't see that, but I'm trying to add inflection to my voice. It's going to let you know that because they don't know what we're going to talk about today. Only I, Lee Elias, knows today's topic, and I'm going to share it with them now. As I said, this is a signature episode. And we've been on the air for a long time, guys, well over a year now. And I realized we have actually never done an episode ever where we tell people who we are and what we do. And I thought it might be time to officially introduce ourselves to our audience. So this might not be a super hockey-centric episode, but it's kind of like a, hey, meet the hosts. You know, I got Christy laughing because I was scared there for a minute the way she was looking at me. But no, I did. I wanted to dive in today and really just talk about a little bit more like who we are kind of behind the scenes. Cause I really, we're just three people talking hockey every week. And we have lives and I wanted to explain that. And I, the reason I didn't tell you to, this is because I have great admiration for both of you, actually extreme amounts. And I wanted to be able to share that with the audience without you guys preparing for it, in one way or another. And Christy, I'm going to start with you, because I, for those of you who don't know, Christy is a trailblazer in many different ways. She's been working in television news since, I believe, 1986. Is that correct? She has won many awards. She is a staple up in Syracuse, New York. I was blessed to go visit her when we released our book. And it was like the whole community was her family. Everybody knew who she was. People coming up to her, stopping her at Starbucks. Are you Christy Casciano? She's yes, I am. It was really beautiful, actually. And then on top of it, you have just really served your community. Of course, this is on top of being a hockey mom, a mom of two, a loving wife, which we'll get into. But Christy, again, I said this, a trailblazer, because you're a female anchor. You know, you have always been humble about that. But I'm amazed, as someone who was trained in broadcast journalism, at what you've accomplished, how you accomplished it, and the person that you are in that community. So I mean that as a compliment, but I want you to tell the audience, if you're okay with it, just how you got in the news and, you know, how you got to the place you're at, because it is amazing to me.
Now that I'm 20 shades of red, thank you very much.
Well, for those of you listening, you can't see that, but thank you for admitting that.
I don't like talking about myself.
I know you
do. ask me a question.
Ask you a question. Okay. Tell me how you got into the news industry at a time period where honestly, women were not in news, right? In the mid 80s, that was not something that was readily available. And then maybe tell us about your trip up to Anchor, because that is a prestigious position to be in. And you serve a major city in New York.
I do love what I do. I have a great passion for it. And it all started with my love for writing when I was a kid. And I discovered the big silver microphone at my dad's grocery store. I was a cashier. And when he finally allowed me to make the announcements in the store, something came over me. It felt amazing to be able to grab that microphone and make announcements in this grocery store, and everybody paid attention to what you were saying. And I was kind of a shy little kid. I was not super popular in school. I was kind of a chunky kid, and I got bullied a lot because of my weight. And all of a sudden, I discovered that people were finding me important when I made this announcement. And then I got a little kind of crazy with that microphone. For example, there was an egg spill in aisle six. And it didn't just, most of the cashiers would say, clean up in aisle six and be done with it. I went into great descriptions. There's been a catastrophic egg spill in aisle six. We need three people on this immersive cleanup. And there are three cars with their lights on in the parking lot. And I would give, and my dad would laugh. He just thought it was so funny. And he said, you know, you got a really good voice and you're very descriptive. You ought to think about going into radio or television. And boom, light bulb went on. We had this fantastic school, Syracuse University's Newhouse School, the premier school in the country for broadcasting. That was my only choice. And when I applied, I got accepted and trained to be a journalist and just fell in love with it. One of my favorite television stations growing up was News Channel 9. We would watch it every night. My dad would have the news on. And that was our thing. We watched the news together. And he said, that'd be really cool if you could work for Channel 9 someday. So I applied for an internship. I got an internship, started working in radio. My first job was in Rochester after I graduated from Newhouse. And then the news director at the time worked with me in radio, brought me back, and I couldn't wait to get started in Syracuse and be a part of the community and give back to the community that gave so much to me. The rest is history. So I did every job at the TV station. Anchoring, reporting, producing. I did a little shooting, everything. So now I'm the main, like I hate talking about myself.
You're doing great. You're doing great.
Now I'm the main anchor and very proud. And we lead a great team of reporters and journalists. And during COVID, it was exhausting. The news wheel was spinning so quickly and there were no guide rails
right
at that time. And at that point, I felt this is the most important time of my career. And just going into work every day when no one else was there, it was challenging, and delivering news that was just so heartbreaking. But I knew it was important to do that. So yeah, just a Reader's Digest version.
Oh, you did great. You did great. First off, thank you for
saying that. I hate talking about myself.
I know you do.
Let's talk about hockey, please.
I'm going to tell you this. Obviously, this is the story before hockey ruined your life. But I want everybody to know that, Christy, I really appreciate that. I know you don't like to do that, but I will tell you that you did great. And look, I like hearing that. I'm sure the audience likes hearing it too. You know, a few things. First off, that's like the most American story you can get. And I love that. The next thing I was going to say too is that, you know, you and I have had a lot of off-camera discussions about national news and where national news is. We're not going to discuss it now, but I've always said to you, and I mean this, that local news still is extremely valuable and extremely looked upon, probably with a lighter light maybe than agenda-led news. That's what I'm going to say. And I have always loved about news. I had a lot of heroes growing up outside of my parents and my brother. Some of them were, you know, most of them were military, obviously. And yeah, I love athletes, but I admired news anchors. I grew up loving the Edward Morrow and the ability to inform people and the importance of that. And you do that on a daily basis. And I just think that the fact that you're able, let me rephrase that. The fact that people in Syracuse, New York, and surrounding areas invite you into their living rooms every night, right? And you get to be a part of their family. And that's why people come up to you like they know you, right? Like, oh, Christy, I know you. You're on the team. You don't know them, but they know you. And I love that. And that is one of the most amazing services. And it is a service, people, that Christy provides to her neighborhood. And obviously news anchors around the country do that. But your story inspires me, Christy. And I'll tell you what, it builds me up to the way you even started with the microphone in the store. It's funny because I had a similar one. I did the announcements in my high school, right? And I was a very eccentric kid. And they said, why don't we put Lee on the mic? And I used to play music every morning for the kids. And I got into radio because of that. So similar stories there, but I love what you do. I love who you are. And you know, I'll tell you what, one of the things we actually never acknowledged on this show, you talked about being a news anchor during COVID. You did this show every week as well during that time, which we joke, I think was therapy for all three of us when things were going on. But let's skip out of the news, get you in your comfort zone, talk about at least the hockey side of your life. I joked about before it ruined your life. Obviously, I was being sarcastic. But we talk about your kids all the time and your husband. Just tell us about your family real quick. And so, the Reader's Digest version, if you will,
right,
of Christy Cacciaro.
My husband is a hockey mom. Retired Syracuse police detective sergeant. Did a phenomenal work for SPD, did a number of undercover investigations. There was a huge investigation that he was part of with gangs and very violent times. And he's just amazing, just an incredible detective. And I have to be careful because he's listening now.
Well, no one's going to mess with you. If he does anything to you let us know, because we're not going to do anything.
He figures things out way ahead of time before. He's really very intuitive, which is, he's so impressive and smart. One of the smartest men I've ever known. Our kids started playing hockey, not because we wanted them to play hockey. I was a figure skater, so I couldn't wait to get them on the ice. And I got them into figure skating, my son first. He gravitated toward hockey because his cousin played hockey. Once he picked up his stick, he never put it down, never looked back. So all of a sudden I found myself immersed into this crazy world. I felt like I was dropped onto a foreign planet. People were speaking languages I didn't understand and playing this brutal game, and they smelled and there was so much to it. It's like, what do you mean? You have no weekends. There are no Saturdays and Sundays during this season. No, that's when you play. What do you mean? I have to get them up at 5 a.m. for ice. It was crazy. I just thought it was insane. But I quickly fell in love with it and learned everything. And that's one of the things about our family too, is once we start something, we're into it. We're all in, and we learn as much as we can. And we're like little sponges. We like to absorb as much as we can, learning the history and just everything, every little part, just to be successful at being hockey parents and raising our kids and enjoyable experiences. We never pressured them to play. It came from inside of them. We never pushed them in that direction at all. It was, they couldn't wait. In fact, with my son, he was born during Super Bowl Sunday, so I thought he was destined to be a football player. And I put him in football. He didn't like it one bit. He was kicking and screaming to practice. And I put him in karate, and we exposed him to basketball and baseball. He never really enjoyed any of those. But with hockey, he was the one who said, "Mom and Dad, hurry up. Get ready. I don't want to be late. I don't want to be late for practice." So he had that passion, and then little sister just followed along, and she wanted to be exactly like big brother. I did get her into some figure skating shows, and that didn't last very long. We even did a show together, which was really fun. But she just fell in love with hockey too, and she took it all the way. She's playing college hockey. So that's the kind of passion that she has. Do I have any regrets? None at all. I've met incredible friends for lifetime. I just had a lunch last week with a bunch of our hockey mom friends. And we text each other all the time. We're that supportive network, never goes away. It's with you for life. So that's the thing I think people forget. They get so wrapped up in you know, your kids succeeding at the sport, and oh, they have to, you know, go to college, they have to play college hockey. Don't forget about all the fringe benefits that you get, because they're much more valuable long-term and rewarding for your life. So yeah, it's been a great ride.
I love it. I'll tell you, to your son and your daughter, older siblings always lead the way, and they don't realize they're doing it. And it, you know, my older brother led the way for me. So good on your kids for that. And last thing, and Mike, this is kind of your 2-minute warning, Mike, you're up next. So if you get all your blushing out now, Christy, I really appreciate you doing this. I'm also happy that I'm thousands of miles away, because I could see you throw a book at me when I brought the topic up in your mind. And I was like, I ducked out of the way. But speaking of books, Christy, you penned a few books. You're a writer. What's funny about this audience is that they probably know you more as USA Hockey Magazine's hockey mom than maybe an anchor in Syracuse, New York, which I think is pretty funny. But Christy has been an avid writer monthly for USA Hockey Magazine for a long time. It also created the book behind her, if you're watching, My Kids Play Hockey, which this podcast is aptly named after and inspired by, amongst the other books that you've written, obviously, the Puck Hog books. And you've written other books outside of hockey, too. So let's just talk about you as an author for a minute, because, again, it's like there's no stop to what you do. You're just incredibly creative, and it's wonderful. And I want to hear about the writing side, how you even got into that. You said you started as a writer as a young kid. Did that blossom into this today?
Yeah, and my sister's a fantastic illustrator. And when we went on family trips, I would write stories about the trips, and I give my sister the stories, and she would illustrate them. And it was really fun. So we had that neat relationship. This is my first children's book, The Puck Hog. And that was based on real life experiences with watching my kids play. And there was one season where there was a kid who was just incredibly talented, way ahead of all the other kids, and scored all the time. And the kids just weren't having fun, you know. They were winning, but they weren't really enjoying the season, because everything was focused on the star who didn't like to pass. So I got inspired to write a book about the importance of teamwork, and that putting the emphasis on winning all the time can really deflate a season. So I wrote the story. I got my sister to illustrate. I mean, look at that.
Yeah.
She used pencil because she wanted kids to get inspired to be creative, and you don't have to use computers and graphics to create beautiful work, but just a simple pencil. Look what she did with that pencil. I took the story to the Syracuse Crunch, and Jim Sorosi from the Crunch fell in love with the story. And he said, you know, we'll do whatever you can. If you get this published, we would love to support you. So that's why it's Crunch themed as well. So we have a lot of success with that. And all around the country, people were responding to it. Oh my gosh, my kid went through the same thing. There's a puck hog on the team, and it's really not the way to go. And the coaches are putting them in all the time because they want to win, but the kids aren't having fun playing. So this really was a great motivator for a lot of kids who would read it and see themselves as the puck hog, or see someone who they played with as the puck hog. There's some really good mechanisms in here on how to deal with that. So after that book did really well, we had a trip to Lake Placid, and it was incredible. So the second book we decided to base on the our own Miracle on Ice, with Lake Placid as the theme. And it was so much fun to write, because I took the kids on kind of a fun journey, and I wanted to also have, you know, some mystery in there. So we threw a ghost in there. And this is Jim Sorosi's kid. My sister took a picture of little Holden Sorosi scoring, and she created that. And Jim was just, and he was blown away. He's like, oh my gosh, that's Holden. And he'll forever be 8 years old. So it was great. When Harry Thompson, who is the editor of USA Hockey Magazine, was searching for someone to write for the magazine, he somehow stumbled upon my blog, because he started blogging too. And he reached out to me, and he said, you know, we're trying to give the magazine you know, a fresh coat of paint, and we're looking for someone. And at the time, Sophia was 8 years old. So, you know, we're going back 10 years. We're looking for somebody to write from the trenches, because we want to give people, like, what's it like out there? You know, how are you dealing with traveling and expenses? And do you have any tips for other hockey parents? And like, yeah, I got a ton of them. You want someone in the trenches? I am in the trenches. So I gave him a sample article. He really liked it. He said, we'd like to hire you. So I started writing for USA Hockey Magazine. We come up with things, and a lot of times I'll pitch ideas based on what our teams were experiencing and hearing from other hockey parents. All of a sudden, this huge network of hockey families grew, and I would tap them. I would, you know, write to my contact in Alaska and say, hey, what are you guys dealing with? Or down in Texas and in the Midwest, all these families were all of a sudden leaning toward me for advice and say, you should do this article, or, you know, we just had this issue with bullying on our team. Can you write an article about that? All of a sudden it just blossomed. So it's been really fun connecting with hockey parents all over the country and writing these articles. And I'm really appreciative of having the opportunity to just share what it's like as a little hockey parent from Syracuse, New York. And it's amazing how many people can relate to what we all go through. It's so many common things.
We should make a podcast about it.
That's kind of a cool thing, hockey community. So my sister is such a, I gotta give her one more plug. She just drew this. It's a graphic novel and it's called Sand. And it's just amazing. So that's what a talented artist she is. So when you get these books and you put them in the hands of the kids, you're going to be treated to some incredible artwork that will just blow you away.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I love my sister Rosemary.
Those books were so great for me growing up, because, I mean, not me growing up, but me with my kids as they were growing up, because, you know, not they're easy to read and they're fun to follow. And I think they are relatable. I think just like your articles and a lot of stuff you're doing, they're relatable to really anybody in the sport. And I know we gave them, I still to this day get comments from, it was probably about the same time. It was at least 8 years ago, right? That we did the Puck Hog gifts to all those little Bedford Bear kids. These parents still have those books. The guarantee they don't have the little trophy or the medal they hang around the neck, but I guarantee they have those books sitting in the kids' room still. They're great.
Christy, thank also, you your I sister, and you recently did another book, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. No, this obviously we're plugging the book here, but this was I want to say this. I'm, for those of you listening, I'm holding up When Hockey Stops, again, the book that Christy and I wrote together. Christy, I'm going to say this, and I've said it before, writing this with you was one of the greatest creative joys of my entire life. I am not exaggerating that because we're on the air. The speed, number one, at which this came together, but the joy that I had writing this, and then the excitement of jumping on the phone with you to like edit and work on it was one of the greatest creative ventures of my life. Mike, that takes nothing away from you in this podcast. I was saying when you were talking, Christy, about the USA Hockey Magazine, someone should do a podcast about being in the trenches with other hockey parents. Yeah. But yeah, many of you don't know this, but this podcast is based on Christy's writings. And again, the book, My Kids Play Hockey, which is really a collection of several articles, if I'm not mistaken, that was the basis for this. And I remember when we started the show, Mike, I remember Christy, you go, are we going to have enough topics? And I picked up her book. I said, well, we've got about 80 in this book we can pick from and just talk about one of these at a time. And in the early episodes, that's what we did. We just kind of paged through the book and, hey, this is a good one for today. And then it evolved into something, obviously, beyond that. Which we're thankful for all of you out there. Christy, that concludes This Is Your Life. You did a wonderful job. Wonderful
get
job.
Get to know me.
Remember, you both, if you want, will get the chance to interrogate me at the end of this episode. Otherwise, I'm just going to dive into it. But honestly, I want the audience to hear about you too, because amazing lives here. So Christy, first off, thank you for sharing. Really, I as I said at the top of the episode, I did spring that on her. And if you had something to throw at me, you would have done it, but you didn't. And I appreciate that. My last note on Christy and this is something I love, is when I was up with her, two things, actually. When I was in Syracuse with her, a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, as broadcasters, you have a news voice and you have your normal voice, and it's the same person. It's just amplified in different ways. Christy doesn't become somebody different when she's on the air. But I was sitting next to you at the radio station, and we were talking like this, and they cued you, and you switched into anchor voice instantaneous. And again, I've never seen you do that. We were talking like this. She's like, today in Syracuse, New York. I was like, whoa, that was a pro move. That was like watching Gretzky on the ice playing. I was like, that was amazing. But Christy, the thing I'll remember the most is the warmth that you shared with other people, but that they shared with you. You are beloved in that city. And it's so warming to see,
especially now
after everything that's kind of happened, that you could feel it. You could just feel, wow, people love you and you love them back. And it's really just how it's just supposed to be. I said, it's an American story. You know, that was my biggest takeaway, not just signing books with you. That was beautiful. All right.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to sauce the puck over to the Benelli man. Okay.
Hey, Mike, listen.
Let me introduce Mike Benelli. I'll introduce you. Now Mike's blushing. I love it. This is why I didn't tell you guys what we were talking about. Let me tell you why I admire Mike. Mike is a man and a human being. He's a father. He's a husband who has dedicated his life really to helping others through the game of hockey. And it's not just players. It's administrators. It's coaches. It's everybody. And I'm not going to lie to you. The reason I admire you, Mike, is because that's an incredibly hard position to be in, and you do it somewhat relentlessly. Now, let me define that again for the people listening. I want you to think about everyone you've ever met in your hockey organization, everyone. And I want you to think about, you know, how much friendship you create, but also how much stress comes from that. And this is, if you ever read the book, The Giver, about a man who takes in everything and compartmentalizes feelings, Mike is kind of that in the hockey universe, and it's an undying passion that he has for the game. Mike, for someone in my position, that's incredibly inspiring. All right. Because there, you know, like, there's days in the game I go, oh, man, this is just tough. And I look at it, I say, look, if Benelli can do it, I can do it. Or as Christy would say, if Benelli can do it, I can Benelli. Do it. Yeah. She'll say Benelli. But Mike, let's talk about this, because you do have a history in the game. I'm not asking you to give me your hockey resume, but just talk to me about, like, you know, how you fell in love with this game, because to do what you do, it's not a common passion. A common passion is going to Madison Square Garden, you know, yelling at other people, hoping the Rangers win and going home. You know, this is something that's 24/7 for you.
Yeah. Well, and thanks. I don't know if a giver is always the best way to describe, you know, what I do, but I think, well, only because honestly, I don't even think about it that way, because I get so much from all the different relationships
from
all these people and my own kids and my families and the people I get involved in. And I really do try to branch out outside of hockey. I mean, my whole, it's funny because hockey is like not even like number one. If you ask me, like, what are your passions? I don't know if hockey would be my first passion, but it is the way. It's the easiest way I found to connect with people and connect, like, the things that I love and the things that I like to do. So, and I think a lot of it stems from, you know, obviously my parents and my father was number one, because he was a big hockey fan. You grew up in the Bronx. He used to sneak into the old Madison Square Garden, you know, and tickets were 5 cents a piece or whatever it was. You know what I mean? Like, all that kind of stuff. And you know, wasn't a hockey player, was a roller guy, you know. So I started skating actually a little bit, like little skaters in Riverdale Ice Skating Center down in the Bronx, but I never played hockey. I don't know why, you know. And even then, hockey was expensive. It wasn't cheap, right? So we never, you know, my father was a professional commercial artist. He probably worked crazy hours down the city. And, you know, my mother, I'm the oldest of five children, so, you know, who had time for hockey, right? And so I grew up at this place called the Kelton's Ice Skating Center, which Alana Kelton was the skating coach and Robbie Kelton was the manager. And I would work around the rink, like sweeping, cleaning, following this guy around all day. So I think I never got involved with hockey, because the biggest hockey that was down at Kelton's Ice Skating Center, and for those listeners, I'd love to hear at some point if you ever went to these games, but it was always the police firemen, like the police athletic league games. And think about this, back in like the 70s, it was nuts. Like, there was no hockey. It was all fights.
Yeah, it was all boxing.
Brawls.
Yeah.
It was hard. It was
horrendous. You went to a fight and a hockey game broke out.
It was just like, it was literally back in the 70s of just the Broad Street Bullies versus the, you know, it was just horrible. It was not a sport I think most people would bring their kids to see and then say, oh yeah, that's something I want my kid to do. So we moved up from the Bronx to beautiful Westchester County up in the country back then was a real country. And I started, so my first time I got on the ice was at the Harvey School in Gatone. I was 11 going on 12 and got on the ice with the chair, you know, back in, you know, you put the kids on the chair from the lounge. And I think within 5 seconds, my father's like, "Okay, get him off the ice. Let's go. Let's get out of here. This is not for him." Because every kid, you know, all at 11 years old, everybody's playing hockey. Like those kids are skating around. They're doing the thing. And like, no, this is not going to work. So let's get him off the ice. He can't even stand up. And so it was really, so I was really so lucky. And I think because, and the reason I'm doing what I do now, if I really think about it, it was because of the people that supported me, like right at that time. Like my father really didn't give up on me. All the coaches that were on the ice were like, what the hell? He plays baseball, football, basketball. Let's go. We can, this is easy. Like we'll get it. And then I think that summer I spent, so again, it was like kind of being around a rink rat type of stuff. Started working at the rink, cleaning up the locker rooms. I used to scrub the boards. This was before the you know, ice with a Brillo pad, a bucket of water, and I would sit on a little bench and I would scrub the puck marks off the boards. That was my summer job. At 12 years old. And the payoff was I got to skate anytime I wanted. So if I was there and the figure skaters got off the ice, I'd put my skates on and I'd skate. And I made our at the time it would have been Bantams, our Bantam A team the next year, you know, that next September. And you know, was I good? No, I never really had the skill, right? So I just worked hard and I got to play in high school, I got to play in college. I got to go, you know, after that, I was really passionate about coaching. I think I've always been I definitely have a soft spot for kids that are late bloomers and not the stars. I used to hate the stars. Like that was like when I was 12 and 13, I just hated watching it. Even in college, I hated watching guys that played that was easy for them. I just hate, you know, just like, what do you mean? You know, you could do that. You don't have to do anything. Like you don't ever work out. You just come and play. Yeah, I'm just good. And I used to hate that. So I really definitely gravitated towards the kids that have passion and wanted to learn. And I hope that's how I present every day. So I started coaching in high school and prep school. I coached in college for a couple of years and then started building rinks around the country. One of them being down in New Jersey there and Montclair State University, Westchester Skating Academy, Danbury Ice Arena, Waterville Valley, New Hampshire. You know, so I started building these rinks and getting involved. And eventually I got to the point where like I really like what I'm doing and I think I'm pretty good at it. And I just started branching out and that's what I do now. I basically branch out and I help other organizations not make the mistakes that I certainly made all of them, you know, ordering the wrong size jerseys for kids. And, you show up at a rink, you know, 5 hours away and there's no game. And, you know, little things like that, Christy knows, like, you know, trying to have international hockey schools and working on logistics and payments and coaches and, you know, making sure everybody's having, in the customer service world, a great experience. And so I do the hockey side of what I do is, you know, really what I enjoy the most, right? Because it's the easiest for me. You know, my wife's a licensed clinical social worker, so she fits right into what I need, you know, when I go home. And and then I have, you know, and then I think just because of the way our podcast is formulated, you know, I have, and people will understand this from the hockey world, and we do, right, that I have an 07 year birth and a 2013 year birth, so you know where they fit in the hockey world. And I've been, and again, I've been coaching. It's so funny that you're bringing this up because I just had to fill out a survey for, the NHL coaches conference. And one of the things they do is they start surveying you like, okay, well, what do you coach? You know, all these different things like, oh, what level are you coaching? You know, what level do you coach? That kind of stuff. And like, I literally can't do like my check boxes is every box. Right. I basically work with NHL players. I work with junior players. I work with midgets and bantams and 15U. I work with the you know, learn to play players.
Right, Mike, in the business world, we call people like you an asset.
And most people in my business call me half of that. I think that, you know, and again, I'll get those questions like, oh, you must be a huge hockey fan. I go, I don't have time. Number one, I don't have time to watch hockey. The only thing I know about the NHL is from the Elimination Cafe and from my son Michael. Those are the two. Those are the only and Arthur. Like any. So the greatest gift to me to my kids was NHL 22. Right, I've learned more about hockey through that and through them. I just don't have time to watch NHL hockey games.
Well, I'm going to say this for you on your behalf. There is a big difference between being an NHL fan and a hockey fan.
Right.
All right. You're a hockey fan. All right. Like my business partner doesn't watch the NHL at all. I mean, he couldn't tell you a few players on his own team in his own town, and they're in the Stanley Cup final. Right. But he loves the game though. So there is a difference. My quick bit of advice. When you start a segment saying, oh, I don't know if it's my number one passion, don't be in an office surrounded by hockey pucks, hockey sticks, hockey paraphernalia, and then be wearing a hockey jacket. I'm teasing you. Background. Hockey sunglasses you got on there. You know, I got multiple sports behind me. Anyway, no, Mike, that's a beautiful story.
Well, the other side, if I turn it around, the other side of my office is all fly fishing gear and, you know.
Yeah, but you didn't do that, Mike. You're looking at all the hockey stuff. No, listen.
Look, my hockey is a hockey well-rounded podcast here, so.
All right, so you love to fly fish. See, I didn't even know that.
There you go.
Right. Well, that's the whole connection to Norway, right? And the whole, like I said, I got to have a hockey school in Norway so I could go salmon fishing. If we could tie in hockey, and anybody that's listening, I love doing hockey schools in British Columbia, anywhere on the East Coast, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Maine, and during the striper season, that's always the best time to be invited. Things like
that. You don't get to like Oklahoma much or Northern Texas.
Sushi in Oklahoma, and I'm not, I hope, but no, it's always, like Colorado. I'm always up for trout, but, so I do. And it's funny, just the hockey world, as Christy knows, and as you know, through what you're doing, it's amazing. All the, you know, it's so cool. The people you meet and then how it branches off to like my things. I was in the for 6 years, I was in the IT staffing business. Thought I'd try this. I was really fortunate to have an ex dad or, you know, one of my ex players' dad who had a staffing company hired me sight unseen. Basically like, you know, you like to talk to people. You're good at customer service. Why don't you get involved in this industry? You know, get out of this, you know, getting just beat up from hockey parents all the time. So what ended up happening is I ended up being really successful in this, and it was every single one of my clients was a hockey person. Because who knew? I'm like, I said, who knew that's the head of American Express's IT department, or who knew that was, you know, this guy is a Java developer. I wouldn't know this kind of stuff. So, you know, but it was really funny how the hockey, you know, because in the hockey world, you forget as a hockey person, everybody that's coming to your world, the only way they could afford to be there is to be not a hockey person.
Right.
You know, they have to be in business. And, you know, and so it's really fun. And this stuff comes up all the time when I talk to players now, and I advise kids, high school kids that want to help. I'm like, do you know that the three volunteers that are out there doing the clinic own this, they own that, they own this, they own that? Be involved. I guarantee you, when you send your resume to these people, they're going to get a second look, and you're going to get on top of the pile. All those little things like that you don't think about. You know, you think about, oh, this guy, you know, I'm out here helping this guy's kid. No, you're out here. This is a job interview. Every time you step on the ice or step on the field or step on the diamond. And, you know, I really try to bring that perspective to, you know, all the things I do with the kids, that it's not just about, and we've talked about this probably a number of times on and off the air, is, you know, just all of these great different things that come into play outside of shooting a hockey puck.
Right.
And that's why we do it, right?
A couple of quick similarities between both your stories. One is that, and you both said this, and it's just so true, it's really the people you interact with more than even the game itself, right? It's the connections you make along the way. If you're a player, it's the guys or the girls in the locker room. I mean, that is something that it's tough during the journey to grasp, but as you move on, you start to realize how important those relationships are. Mike, the other thing too, that you both share this, is that, you know, at times in your life, people say, you can't do this. There's no future in this for you, right? And that just with a smile never stopped you. Just never stopped either. You said, okay, yeah, I'm just going to do it anyway. I love that about both.
People still ask me, like, what do you do? Yeah. I go, oh, I do some hockey advising and stuff. Yeah, but what do you do for like a living? Yeah,
what do you do? I get that all the time.
I go, well, I don't make a living.
You make a living off of this? I do. But how? I just wanted to. Mike, look, one more compliment I'm going to pay you. Again, things people don't know about you. And this is, again, you and Christy are very similar. You are so selfless in your approach, right? Now, don't get me wrong. You're just like me. You're a businessman. You got to make a living, right? But, you know, I have seen you on many occasions just do the right thing because you care about other people. You care about these kids. You care about their parents, right? You care, even though they may not sometimes. I'm not trying to make that negative. And you just continue to do it. And just like Christy, Mike, you've affected a lot of lives that have affected other lives and have affected other lives. And you know, the ripple effect on the good work that you do and the type of person you are is going to continue for a long time. And again, it trying to keep this positive, while there are frustrating moments in hockey weekly, we're lucky to have someone like you in the position that you're in. I really, really mean that, right? Because you're a beacon for people like me in a lot of ways, but you know, I know that there are people that appreciate what you do. Even if, like you said, look, in the Northeast, we throw compliments like sledgehammers. All right. So you might not get it a lot, but I've always admired, from the day I met you, and I you might not remember this, but I actually met Mike well before this podcast, up in New Jersey at Bryce Salvador's training facility. And he just comes in with these floorball sticks. Like, we got to get the kids using these. They're good for their development. I remember thinking, like, this guy's trying to sell floorball sticks. He didn't sell a thing. You just try to get the kids to use the floorball sticks. And like, this is going to grow the game. And I was like, wow, this guy's really into it. And little did I know that 3 years later from that point, we'd be sitting here with one of the most famous news anchors in the world doing this. So that's all the time we have for today's episode. I want to thank you all for being here.
How do you get off the hook? I don't understand.
I host the show. I can do whatever. Yeah, right. No, I'm happy to turn this on myself now. But before we do, I want everybody listening. I deeply admire these two people that I co-host the show with. And I'm lucky, fortunate, blessed to share this airtime with you every week. You always hear that statement, you know, you are who you hang out with. I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed to be able to hang out with you two every week. That's really how I look at it. And we've said it before, like, it's like uplifting for the week. It's a great way to start your Monday, right? Because nobody starts their Monday feeling like, yeah, you know, it's you get out of bed. Monday, you know? Right.
And I will say, I mean, you know, before you go off you know,
my 4 hour journey of
but before you start talking, this could be a while, but I think, you know, one of the things that is so great for us, and I think I can speak for Christy in this side too, is really without you and Caitlin and the team that you have, not only couldn't we do this logistically, because, you know, I can't turn a mic on, Christy can't get her camera angle straight, you know, we're both like, you know, really so fortunate to have a professional team around this outside of what she does for as a profession and what I do for a profession. And I think more importantly, the fact, the stick to itness of it, like that, okay, well, Mike can't make it, we're going to go. Christy can't make it, we're going to go.
Right.
You know, this person is not available, we're going to have a program anyway.
Right.
And this kind of stuff is like, I don't think people really, you know, can appreciate how much goes into the pre, in, and post production of these kind of things that, you know, again, and no, you know, not for nothing, I love doing it. It is therapy to me. It is a way for me to, you know, express a lot of things to the hockey world that I might not be able to get in on a Twitter post. But what it does is allows for me personally, because I know how this affects what I do, I get so much more interaction from people, good and bad, like negative and positive. Like, oh, you're full of crap. You know, you don't, I'm like, yeah, I agree. Let's hear about it and let's talk about it and let's change the game in a positive way. And then let's fix, let's fix a lot of these things we can fix. And I really do admire what your team has done, you know, not only put this together, but keep it together. So yeah, well, it's a real tribute to
that. I got to tell you, Mike, I love your honesty too. And is so much, I don't know anybody who's smarter in hockey than you. Honestly, you have such incredible knowledge and you bring so much value to our podcast every week. But 2 days ago, somebody in the business with me said they wanted to start a podcast, and they knew I have a podcast, right? So they said, so how do you do that? Can you give it to me step by step? Like, what do I need? How do I do it? How do I produce it? And I went,
you're just talking to the mic, right? It just hit record, right?
I don't know. All I do is talk and it comes up on a website. I don't know.
Yeah, you need a Caitlin.
I'm sorry. I haven't a clue. They go, what do you mean? I see you every week. Yeah, I don't know how to do it.
Magic.
Well, listen, no the answer clue. To that question is Caitlin, and I'll give Caitlin
a warning. It's kind of magical.
We'll see if we can get Caitlin to come up here at the end of the episode to say hello to everybody, because this really is a four-person team, whether people realize it or not. We're just the ones on the air. But, no, Mike, I appreciate you bringing that up, because there is a lot that goes into making these possible. And the one thing you said I want to tap on is that I'm a big believer in discussion-based learning, right? Like, while teaching and coaching are extremely valuable, I think when people have discussions, even if they disagree, more learning comes out of that than just someone saying, and then 1776, you know, this happened, you know what I mean? And I think that the purpose of the show, you know, while we're all experts in our own right, we've always opened it up for the audience of, hey, look, this is just what we think. We, you know, feel free to chime in.
And that's, we don't always agree. Yeah. I'll go back to the uniform episode. That's right. Anyway,
well, we won't
talk about that.
We fly fish them over.
What I love
one.
About this is we come with different experiences,
right?
And we're honest about it.
Yeah, yeah,
and we find that a lot.
There is a trust here that's been since moment one that has existed, and will continue to. Okay, so listen, for me, Christy, do you want me to dive into it, or do you want to turn into interviewer and ask questions? Because that's
Let's
usually where
questions.
You're,
what do you think,
most
Mike?
Comfortable.
We'll ask some questions. Yeah,
questions is better, because then we can contain him.
That's funny. Hour five, my fifth year of life. No, go ahead. I wanted
Episode
to give you guys
three.
Yeah,
run on the next five.
The 12
Saturdays.
Part series.
Go ahead, Christy. You're the professional. Open it up.
All right. So we just tell us about your family, because I know you love talking about them.
I do.
Your wife and your two kids. And this last season, you sat out as a coach, which
I'm about to. Yeah. So, look, if anybody asks me what I do, the first thing I always say is I'm a father first to my two children, Logan and Alina, and I'm a husband to my wife, Janet, after that. And my wife, who's a hero to me and many other people, is a physician here in Philadelphia. And really led the COVID response for the city from a university level. So I've always been, like I always say this, I'm 6 feet tall, about 5'11", 6 foot, but I look up to my 5'2" wife every day. But, you know, I was actually born and raised in Philadelphia, right outside in the early suburbs, by my mother, Evelyn, and my father, Edward, who were the greatest role models you could have, and my big brother, Alan. Look, I was really blessed that both of my parents had steady work growing up. They taught me the value of work. You know, I always talk about my father telling me about the time he got a job as a young kid. I think he started working when he was 12 years old or 13 years old. And the pride about having a job really stuck with me. And that helped to develop a work ethic in me of just, you know, valuing work, I guess, in a lot of ways. And then my big brother always led from the front. He hates when I talk about it, but I was always watching. My brother's 5 years older than me. And he would do things like, you know, go on stage and do debate, and he would try track, and he would try all these things. And I just naturally went, well, if he goes on stage, I got to try and do that. I got to be a public speaker, broadcaster at some point. Well, if he's playing sports, I got to do that, right? If he's getting great grades in college, well, I got to do that, right? So I always feel like there was a divine influence of somebody showing me a path, if you will, right? And now that I'm older, I'm starting to realize that the people that did that, maybe they didn't have a path, right? They figured it out and paved the way for me. And I'm always thankful for that. And I'm trying to do that for my children and my family now. But really, even going back to my grandparents, like I said, I'm going to cap it, or else I'll be here for 6 hours. But my grandparents, my grandmother came from another country. And, you know, her it took a year for her to trek across Europe to get to North America. I remember her telling me that story growing up. So that's the basis I've had of the incredible struggle. You know, I have no problem admitting this, you know, I'm a Jewish household. So, you know, we learn a lot about history in a household like that. And those were the people that shaped me, you know, a value on family, a value on work, a value on identity and survival, and a real anchor of, you know, how bad it could be. You know, my grandmother didn't have lots of food on both sides. Actually, my grandparents, you know, my father grew up in poverty. So I've always tried to have an anchor of, wow, hey, I love Psychogenesis, but my, you know, we got three meals a day. Especially as I've gotten older, I've realized that. But again, Christy, to anchor it, that's kind of the basis I started from even before I was in the game.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think knowing that about you, right, really helps to kind of frame, you know, how a lot of your empathy comes from, and a lot of your, obviously your passion and your thankfulness. And you hear that in everything you do. Like I know, like on the outside of this, in the business world, when we do things together and we collaborate on different pieces, it's not all about, you know, and I don't want to say it's because it's not greed. It's about, okay, well, what can we do here? How can we make this work? And what in this circumstance, what's the best way to approach this? And, you know, there's no upselling. There's no like, oh, well, if you like this, you're really going to like this.
Right.
Like, and I think that's so important because of the fact that, you know, we're in an industry and we're, you know, that we could forget that not everybody has the means to buy a brand new pair of skates every 5 months.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, like me, I didn't have a brand new pair of skates until I played college hockey, like ever. Like, I'm right. Like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Like, this happens. Like, who can get this? You know? So I think it's, and my younger brothers and sisters never had skates because they're always, you know, they're, you know, coming up from behind you. But I guess my real question then would be to you from that, from where you came. And we know a little bit about your hockey history and how you overcame a lot of adversity as a player, but then what was the piece that really kind of said to you, well, you know what? I think I could put all these different pieces together and be in the hockey world. And I think, you know, outside of the motivational speaking you do, and you could, and I'd love you to talk about, you know, your book series and the things you do on that side, because I use those books all the time as references to other people I coach and work with. But maybe just how did you even get into the piece of the industry you're in now,
right?
Where you're actually selling hockey products?
You know, I am going to try and give that answer. There's multiple points, and you have my word, I won't go for 6 hours on this. Okay. It's the people I was around that triggered me into that. My mother, who was a nurse for, you know, 40 years, Christy, similar to you, like, you know, she was a leader, and that wasn't exactly something in her younger years that was normalized as a female leader. So I always had these strong female characters in my life, people in my life. Right. And that my father and my mother and my brother, they did the work and got what they wanted, right? And I remember, and there's like three touch points here, Mike. I remember when I was about 12 years old, 11, 12 years old, and roller hockey was really popular. And I was outside, and I turned to the kid I was playing with, his neighbor, and I said to him, hey, do you think we can make the NHL? Right? And he said, no, there's no way. Of course not. And I just remember thinking this. I didn't make the NHL as a player. I'll get to that in a minute, but I remember thinking, but someone's got to make it. That was where my mind went. Right. And I'm realizing now that, you know, his mind went, and there's nothing wrong with it. He's probably told this, but his mind went like, there's no point. And my mind went, but somebody's got to make it. That was taught to me by those influences I talked about earlier of, well, someone's got to try. Right. And that started my belief as a player of, I'm going to be a pro hockey player. That's where that came from. Right. And again, you can look that stuff up. I mean, I went very far in the game, and eventually I was not good enough to make the NHL. But in high school, I found outside, you know, people, the second great love of my life, which is broadcasting. And Christy, similar to you, I got on the radio and I just knew. First time I skated, I knew. First time I played hockey, I knew. I was like, this is something special, right? The first time I got on the mic, I said, wow, this is something special. And I have to say this to everybody. I am so lucky. I really mean this, that I have two professional loves in my life, in broadcasting and hockey. Some people don't get any. All right. So I am so thankful I was able to find two passions in that realm. So what did I do? I went to my high school radio station. I had a hockey show. It's an NHL hockey show. And then I realized at that point, Mike, I can go to college for this. I can go to college for broadcasting. Christy went to Syracuse, which is by far the best broadcasting school in the country. I ended up at, Mike, you mentioned this earlier, Montclair State University in New Jersey, who also had a really great broadcasting school. Yeah. And I was playing college hockey up there. And towards the end of my college career, it was pretty obvious. You know, I had some minor league looks, but I realized that this might be it. But I started working in broadcasting and eventually got a job at the NHL, right? With the NHL Network. And I realized, you know, I joke, but it's kind of true. Hey, I made it. I made it to the NHL. I was working NHL headquarters in New York City. I'm doing NHL live broadcasts. And it was around that time, Mike, that my college team, Montclair State University, had no coach. And I was 22 years old. And I volunteered to be the head coach of that team. And I remember the administrators thought I was crazy. They said, why would you want to do this? You're 22. You should be partying, which is absolutely not what you should be doing at 22, by the way, for those of you listening. I dove in and we turned a team that was 5-25 before I took over into a team that was 25-5. We did that together. And that's when I realized there's something here. Like, wow, I'm good at this. And collectively as a team, and Mike, you know where that's going, we were able to accomplish something that everyone said we were not able to accomplish. Like everyone said, this team's going to go under. And so I started to identify through this. I'm a great coach and I work at the NHL. And that was wonderful until all of my life fell apart at 26 or 27, where I lost everything that I had, really by no fault of my own, right? My job at the NHL and my job at coaching were gone within a month. One of them at the NHL, it was the recession. My position was terminated. The NHL Network was launched. They didn't need me anymore. I've said this before. I will always be thankful in my exit interview that they said to me, you didn't do anything wrong. looking back on that now as an adult, I would have dwelled on that forever. And then the college team, it was time to move on. And what happened was I had nothing left. And it was at that moment I realized, you know what you have? I have my girlfriend at the time, Janet, who's my wife now. My mom and my dad and my brother were there for me. That was the moment, Mike, real trigger moment in my life, that I stopped identifying as a person in hockey. That was not my identity. I'm just a family person, and I'm going to identify differently. And that was the moment, probably the modern version of myself was born. And I realized I don't need to do this. I choose to do this. And from there, I set on a journey of, I want to inspire teams and I want to inspire people. And my wife joined the Air Force and I traveled all over the world and I got to do hockey everywhere, leading to professional teams and professional championships. And this belief now that I was put here to help other people and to share stories. But I had to go through all of that stuff, which, by the way, as I said earlier, minimal suffering compared to what my parents and my grandparents went through, but suffering all nonetheless. Right.
Well, let's hit the pause button for a moment, because a lot of people might be going through that at this very moment. Sure, you have this major earthquake in your life and you think, this is horrible.
Oh, it hurt.
I have no future. And you're depressed and you're upset and you think it's never going to get better. But sometimes you just have to have a little bit of faith.
Right.
Because sometimes those earthquakes are necessary in our life, because you know what happens is there's a reformation. Right. And it kind of like, there's this huge upheaval and it puts you on a different path that you never would have seen and never would have experienced had that earthquake not taken place. So I always tell people that when they go through those tumultuous times in their life, that there's, and it's, I know it sounds cliche, but sometimes there is a reason for that, because that's not where you're meant to be.
Right.
You're meant to be someplace else. And that's a really good lesson for people to learn. And you experienced that.
Yeah. I'll tell you a couple of things about that time period. Cause I was very depressed. Look, I was very fortunate. I had, again, my parents and my wife, my future wife at the time, and my brother. Some people don't have anybody at those times. It's always important for everybody listening that you try and be that person if someone's really in need. All right. We underestimate how important we are to each other. But you know, what changed really at that time, and this is the thing I think I realized, Christy, aside from the identity, was that I was so focused on getting to the top before that. I have to get to the top. to the point I wasn't even like thinking, wow, you're at the NHL, you're a college coach at this 20 early. Like, I had no concept of like, wow, you're really doing well, man. Right. It was just got to get to the top. And when I fell from that mountain, you know, my father gave me this great advice because I was really ready to just kind of give up on things. And he said, you know, just take a step, just take the next step, you know, fight for what you need to do, but just take a step. Stop trying to see 10 miles ahead and just take the next step. And after you take that step, take another step. And I really had to slow down and this is where I started learning about present moment awareness, which I'm not going to give a whole speech on right now, but I live my life like that now. In fact, I think I told this story. I was recently in England coaching pro again. And this guy said, well, what's your goal? Where do you want to be? He was younger, right? So I just want to be right here, right now. He's like, no, I know, but what's your long-term goal? You want to coach in the NHL? I said, my long-term goal. He goes, yeah. I said, I just want to be right here, right now. And I had to try to explain that to him. Like, that's my goal constantly, is to be present. Right. And you know, what's funny about it, Christy, Mike, the rest kind of takes care of itself. Yeah. I found just as much success doing that, probably more than when I didn't do that. Right. And enjoying the journey. But yeah, look, it was a great quote of, if you're in the darkness, can you see the next step in front of you and just take that step? You don't have to figure the entire future out right now, especially when you're depressed. It's not going to materialize. Just take a step. You will get out of it. Right. And I did. And I've been thankful every day for that collapse, Christy. Every day that earthquake you talk about, it was a massive life change. I'm thankful for it every single day. Right. Cause I would not have been on this path without it. And then Mike, like you said, as you do too, I've been very fortunate to create hockey businesses. Again, we're not plugging things today, but I have a global hockey company. I have an upcoming hockey company. I get to coach through my hockey companies. So I've been put in a position where I'm able to use hockey as a conduit to help other people, which is really my passion, and broadcasting. So it eventually came to that point anyway. I do want to say this though, because, and this is true, Christy, of you and Mike and myself, the love we have for the game, just use that terminology right now, broadcasting, is uncommon. Now, everybody says they love the game, and people do on different levels, but I mean, this is a life passion of mine. All right. I love hockey. I love it. And I love that I get to use it, as I said, as a conduit to help others. That's the blessing. Right. I don't need to be an NHL coach to do that. Right. Or a player, going back to what I said when I was 12. Right. And I feel like, you know, that's the gift. Right. And I'm okay with that. I don't look at myself as a failure. A 12-year-old me might, but I'm not 12. Right. So that's my point, is just enjoying the journey and being along the way. And Mike, like you said, like, I'm so driven to help people. I especially now, you know, whether it's mental fitness or my work in mental fitness or the books I've wrote, they're all done with an intention of helping other people. And if I get to make a living doing that, right, I don't need to be a billionaire. I don't. Right. I get to make a living helping people and making people feel good. That's really where I'm at. If that's wishy-washy, that's fine. This is my journey. Right. Right. That's what I get to do. Again, for those of you who don't know, this is actually a 4-person team. You see the three of us. There she is.
There we go.
This is Caitlin Reese, our producer, our community manager. Every time you see an episode, a clip, literally she did it. She has a hand in it. But Caitlin, I wanted to bring you on today. I this is why I didn't tell you about what we were doing today. Because your passion for this is equal to all of us. But I wanted you all to meet her, see her. And again, she's blushing too. I'm sorry. But and if you're seeing a cat tail on your video, we have an office cat here in Philadelphia. So there's actually 5 members of this team. Rory the cat. But Caitlin, why don't you tell everybody? Because you've had a unique journey into this game as well.
Yeah. So I wasn't a hockey fan at all growing up. I found the game super late in life. What we call my rebirth, at the age of 20. And you know, a couple years later, I found myself working in the game. And it's just been fantastic since. My best friend brought me to my first hockey game, and from there, that's really everything. I went to school to teach, and I had a passion for creating things. I did broadcast in high school, and here I am.
Yeah, I'm going to say something about you, Caitlin. Caitlin has done something this last year that 99.9% of you have not done in hockey, including myself. Caitlin went to every single, all 41 home games last year for her local professional sports team. That is the Philadelphia Flyers. And she did this in literally the worst season the Flyers have ever had. You want to talk about dedication? Let me tell you something. When we got to game 32, Caitlin, even you were starting to go like, oh, I've got a game tonight. I got to go see the Flyers tonight. But she loves this game and she loves the team so much. And I've said to her before, and I think it's important for everybody to hear this. How many years have you been in hockey, Caitlin? Like 3, 4?
Coming up on 5.
5 years, all right? So easy for people to look, you're not a real hockey person. You're only doing it 5 years. Her passion is matched, if not beyond, my passion for this game within 5 years. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. That's the point I'm trying to make. 1 year, 5 years, 50 years. The point is she's in it, she's invaluable, and she's contributing to the game, not just through this podcast, right? Through all of the work that we do. And I've said this before, I'm sorry if I'm making you blush, but she is so invaluable to our team, and we hope we make you feel that way, right? That we could not be doing any of this without, right? And above all, she's a great human being and a great person, you know, beyond belief. I mean, she's helped my family went without me asking. I mean, there's so many things I could say about you, Caitlin, but Caitlin Reese, we had to bring you up here and tell everybody about you.
I appreciate it.
Okay. You can go turn off your camera if you want, or you can stay on here. I should say, Mike, Christy, do you have any questions for Caitlin?
I'm not going to mention Gritty, but
he's behind you.
No, but I think I've got to know Caitlin a little bit on her remote treks and the stuff she does behind the scenes. Real professional, you know, passionate, and you wouldn't know you were only involved in hockey in a couple of years. And I think that's irrelevant to what you know, your knowledge of the game or, you know, background of power plays and you know, player development is irrelevant to a lot of the stuff that you do, only because, you know, you can see in your work outside of the podcast, but all the other stuff you do, that you're capturing hockey. You're capturing the passion and the craziness, right, of being a fan. And I love that. I think it's great. So I'll speak for me. I really appreciate what you do here, because you keep it, again, like to Christy's point, like if somebody says, oh yeah, well, how do you do that? I'd love a crash course on podcasting. I'm like, I have no idea how I do it. All I know is I think the computer turned on correctly and I was in good shape. So
we have a Caitlin.
Yeah.
I appreciate Caitlin, that.
You're just so much fun to be around too. We had, when you guys came up to Syracuse for the book signing, we had a ball, and I was really excited because she's a huge fan of Irish culture, shall we say. In Syracuse, we are the home of the only traffic light where the green is on top. And I didn't tell her where I was bringing her. It's up on Tip Hill. And I brought you guys there and I pointed to the light and your eyes just lit up as big as that traffic light. It was so exciting to do that.
That was so cool.
Caitlin's happy in hockey rinks and in Irish culture. That's 100% accurate. I met Caitlin, yes. Again, very quick one. I met Caitlin at an Irish festival that was across the street from my house. She runs up to me, first time I ever met, she goes, are you Lee from Elimination Cafe? I couldn't believe it. And my wife looked at me and said, bull, beep. I can't say it out loud on the show. And I said, what's your name? Caitlin. Caitlin, nice to meet you. What do you do? I'm a photographer. You know, we're always looking for photographers. That's how we met. And addendum to the story about all the Flyers games. She went there as a photographer. She didn't pay for tickets. She was there working. Okay. So the next time you meet someone, so I've only done the game a couple of years. Don't judge right away. All right. She's done something I've never done in the game. And again, Caitlin, I always joke with her friends listening. Yes, you will always have that in your back pocket. Yeah. But did you go see the Flyers during the worst season ever? Every single home game? Cause she did. All right.
I drove from Syracuse to Philly.
You did.
To go to the game.
Against Toronto too. That's the funny thing about it. But again, building on the episode, she doesn't identify that way. It was just something she did. It was a bucket list checkbox and an incredible human being that also cares about other people an immense amount, which is probably the common theme, I'm guessing, between the four of us now is that we just tend to want to help other people, servant leaders. And for those of you listening, again, obviously we can't put all of you on the mic, but we appreciate you too. If you're listening to this show, you obviously have some sort of common bond with what we're talking about. And we really do, really, from the bottom of our hearts, appreciate that. The fact that you invite us into your cars and your iPhones and whatever you're listening to or watching this on, and the trust that we've earned to just talk to you is big. And the amount of emails and the comments we get of just, wow, somebody else went through that. Or I feel you on this, or I love your show. It's why we do it every week. It's why we do it every single week. And we share all those with the group. But that concludes, I think, This Is Your Life edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. But I want to thank the three of you, really, for doing this. I did not tell them the topic today. I put them all on the spot. And again, I'm far enough away from most of you that you can't throw something at me. And Caitlin's office door is shut right now, so that's not going to be biting me in the butt anytime soon. Again, if you have any questions about any of us or anything we talk about in the shows, or you have a topic idea, feel free to reach out to us at team@ourkidsplayhockey.com or visit our website, ourkidsplayhockey.com, or our Facebook page, Our Kids. You get the point. We're everywhere. Just search for Our Kids Play Hockey and we'll show up. But for Christy Casciano-Burns, Mike Benelli, and Caitlin Reese making her debut, I'm Lee Elias. Thanks for listening to this edition of our show, and we'll see you next week. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. Make sure to like and subscribe right now if you found value wherever you're listening, whether it's a podcast network, a social media network, or our website, ourkidsplayhockey.com. Also, make sure to check out our children's book, When Hockey Stops, at whenhockeystops.com. It's a book that helps children deal with adversity in the game and in life. We're very proud of it. But thanks so much for listening to this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey, and we'll see you on the next episode.